step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 414. My name is Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my co-host, Nicole Shiro, or Nick to the first power.
It's just Shiro, your hero.
You're listening to us on... That's funny. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. You're also listening to us on the web at koop.org. Don't go away.
The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Turn that door with all the...
It is Wednesday, May 24th, 2017. On the show today, Becky Taylor Productions presenting Love Goes Towards Love. It's not really Becky Taylor Productions. And Broadway Across America's production of Something Rotten. And of course, we'll have lively news and views and discussions about the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Verona, and Boston, Massachusetts. How's that for timing?
Oh. That was total ending. Grobes gave you epic ending.
That's Grobes. So that was indeed the Grobes from Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812.
And I know that why just, you played it.
Why?
Because the full cast album just came out.
The Broadway cast album. It's actually interesting. They've got, within 2 years, they have two cast albums out of
the same thing. Yeah.
And really the only difference is the Grobes in terms of the leads.
Yeah, with the Grobes and one's without.
With the other guy, which I can never remember his name.
I can't remember his name. Why should you? You have the Grobes.
You've got the Grobster. The Grobster.
So, yeah, because they only had prologue and letters available, and now they have whole albums out there.
There you go. There you go. So checking in with Nick to the First Power. Our Nick to the Second Power is in the New York.
NYC. He's going to see many shows, so I'm sure he'll have lots to talk about.
Like small
week.
Shows? You said many shows.
Many shows.
Oh, many, M-A-N-Y, not multiple, M-I-N-I. I get it.
More than one, many units.
So I know he's going to see...
Dear Evan Hansen.
Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah, he's going to see some others and I'm sure he's going to see Groundhog Day. Moment. I have to beat him for that one.
Well, beat him too.
So, because I like to do that. I'm an awful person.
Kim Simpson. Another wonderful show.
He looked dapper today,
he got
too.
All,
I have to tell you.
Amazing. All those foreign language versions of Bob Dylan songs, which, of course, it's the Dylan's birthday today.
Bon anniversaire.
Did everybody light
candles
for him?
I like that
him?
You just said it was the Dylan.
It's the Dylan.
The Dills.
The Dills. The Dillmeister.
The Groves, the Dills.
All of them. So let's introduce the folks we have here. We have a nice small group. A lot of estrogen in the room today. Mm-hmm.
The ladies.
We got the ladies.
The ladies are here.
Becky Musser. Hi, Becky.
Hello.
And Taylor Flanagan. Hi.
Hello.
I'm actually very excited that you guys are here because the show that you're going to be talking about is very apropos to a lot of the conversations that we're about to just have.
Nice.
So I'm really, really, really happy. And so we're going to start with a discussion about this whole Virginia Woolf thing that's happening out in Oregon. Do y'all know about that?
I don't. Tell me.
How am I the only one that doesn't know that knows about it? So
we're producing a show that opens in 2 days.
Yeah, but you know what? I know you're on the Facebook. I know it. And I don't remember the name of the theater company in Oregon. Wanted to do a production, and it's a small little. As a matter of fact, I believe the theater itself is called the Little Theater. It's a small little house. They were gonna do. They were given the rights to Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and they cast. What's the other man's name? Not George, but Michael. What's his name? What's the character's name?
Anybody? I can't remember. I was about to say, I always remember George and not Martha and George. And
I'll come up with it. They produced him as a... Nick is his name.
Oh. I didn't think I'd remember that one.
He was a true...
Nick to the
think.
Third power.
Nick to the third power. Yeah. So they cast an African-American actor. And the Albee Estate sent a cease and desist, and I'm going to read the letter that they sent to him. The Albee Estate said... oh, sorry, I don't have that letter. I thought I did have that letter.
Let's get that up for you.
It's all right. Don't worry about it. Basically, they said that the character is written in such a way that it shouldn't be portrayed by an African-American because there are... instances in the play that talk about his blonde hair being the Aryan race, and that's peppered throughout. So they said, you can't do it. Now, just to get historical perspective, you know, Albee is very particular about his shows. Uh-huh. But he did allow a production with, and I forgot where it was done, but they had an African-American Martha.
Correct. And
thank you.
Wait a minute.
I actually knew
but
I was
you
correct.
Know what? Zach did African American Martha too. It's Fran Dorn.
Oh, okay. They didn't.
Fran
I wonder
Dorn.
Why that wasn't mentioned.
I was
in
just
all
about to go. Wait a minute. Fran Dorn played Martha, I think, and it was Helen Marino as the younger, and I think directed. This was almost 15 years ago.
Yeah. Anyway,
So
there's been a pretty big firestorm of controversy around this for people on both sides, and quite frankly, for me, I keep switching sides because I do believe that in, like, you would never see an all white version of Raisin in the Sun
for the
instance.
Color purple. Yeah,
you should, and nor should you. So you wouldn't see that kind of casting. So to me, a character where race is dependent needs to stay. But the more I think about this, is race isn't necessarily dependent on this. So I am vacillating and now more towards the other thing. But the author, I just want to make sure I'm saying that it's doing the right thing. The Writers Guild sent a statement about it, and I just want to read their statement because it's sort of interesting. The Guild asserts that it is the playwright's fundamental right to approve of casting choices to ensure they reflect his or her authorial intent. We assert this right for the Edward Albee and his estate, just as we've asserted it on behalf of Lloyd Suh and his work Jesus in India and Katori Hall and her play The Mountaintop. We also assert the right of playwrights to specify diverse casting for work that is not demographically specific. Playwrights own their work and therefore have the right to make decisions about all aspects of this presentation. At the same time, the Guild is actively engaged in conversations and initiatives aimed at making the American theater a more inclusive place with greater opportunities for all playwrights and lifting barriers that have far too long severely limited opportunities for far too many. We remain firm in our belief that our form can't achieve its full potential until it embraces our cultural and demographic diversity. So the Writers Guild sort of skirting the line. What do you guys think?
Well, I think one thing with it, too, is the fact that it's not even Albee, it's his estate. And that, you know, he has approved castings of African-American Marthas. And so right. Who's to say that
he has it, apparently, from what I understand, it's written.
It's not written.
I was reading here that they're saying that it's written in there because that's where they're starting to argue about, do you take what's written in when people are deceased or do things change because it changes in time?
Well, I don't believe it says it's written specifically that it's white person because he wouldn't have written that back then. But the
I think it's worded
argument
a different
that
way.
The estate says is not only is there the Aryan thing, but the other thing that says it sort of upsets me, and this is where I think that they are just plumb wrong, that if that character was African American, somebody would say something.
What?
Like
yeah.
One of the characters would say something. Like, but I don't agree with that because one of the things, and I talk about this a lot of times, the non-traditional casting of the movie Cinderella with Brandy, where you have Whoopi Goldberg and a white old guy supposedly giving birth to an Asian son.
Victor Garber.
Right.
I don't think it was Victor Garber in that version. It might have been. That argument doesn't fall on my ears good. But I do believe that if it is set out, and one would argue that the calling him blonde hair, blue eyed Aryan would be calling it out. Hmm. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it is complicated when you have
language in the play about it. But I mean, I've seen productions of, I mean, it depends on if you can play it as tongue in cheek in some way. Like I've seen productions of As You Like It. This actually came up recently. I was talking with a friend about it, where they cast a very short Rosalind, but she has a line about like, well, since I'm more than common tall, but you just play it as a joke.
Right.
Like, but I don't know how those moments play in the show, how important they are that they're genuine, and how important it is to actually focus on them and to play that as like a real aspect of that character that that is important to who they are.
Yeah, I know
character.
The work, but I don't know it well enough to be like, yes,
this is
well,
the reference
no,
to the blonde
oh my God,
hair.
It changes
this is
everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Like same. I.
Well, they do talk about his behavior being Nazi-like, but there was a.
It was Jason Alexander, your buddy.
Who was?
Cinderella.
No. Was?
That's okay. What, yeah.
All right. in the Brandy version?
Yes, provides okay. Comic relief with okay. Gold. With gold, right. Gold
anyway, going back to where we were, the...
I can't find context, like...
Well, let me complete my thought.
Is.
May I? Okay, so there was a great Shannon Weaver put a post on Facebook today. I mean, I was just reading it right before, saying I don't know where I sit on this, and it brought an incredible amount of really good discussion by right. our own local folks, and I thought that was great. And somebody posted an article called this is a blog called Bitter Gertrude, blogging about theater and culture.
it's great.
And the guy's saying basically these little theater companies should have the right to do this. I mean, it just seems like it's a good experimental way to do it. It's not hurting the Albee estate. They're talking about taking these canonical, I don't know the proper pronunciation, but things in the canon and putting a spin on it. I mean, this is a 70-year-old play or something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like it's going to hurt it to try some experimentation to see whether they can find another spin on it. But this is apropos of nothing. I just like this one. Let me see. Oh, no, I lost it. But most of the arguments is, oh, here it is. Albee's legacy isn't the argument here. I don't care if Nick is described in the text as a literal Hitler. The estate could have given permission to an undergrad theater lab to stage the entire Albee catalog with mac and cheese filled sock puppets singing the lines as Screamo in a university housing common area filled with cats, pots, and bike parts. Mm-hmm. And Albee's legacy would have been fine.
Oh my God, that's
but I'm
hilarious.
Suddenly sort of agreeing with this. Is why not? Especially yeah. if it's not like it's being done on Broadway, where you're having an open-ended run of 1,500 mm-hmm. seat house, where all these people are going to see it. So, I think Albee's estate should chillax.
I also think we should bring back that word.
Chillax.
Chillax.
Yeah. It's oh, never
I,
gone
I was
away.
Like, it's never gone away in my vocabulary.
It's never gone
that's
away
like,
for me.
That's some good stuff.
But what do y'all think about? So much of this is really about the playwright's intention. So if you, Becky Musser, sit down and write a play, and in your mind you have specific visual instance of your characters. And you actually even write it in the stage directions that this character is an African American, 5'2" with 6 fingers on one hand. Should you have the right to always insist that it's always that way? And should you have the right, as many as like other playwrights do, where you can't even change a word of text that it is sacrosanct? So, what do y'all think of that?
Well, I don't know. It's interesting because thinking about that in that context, I feel like some of it is kind of personal because, I mean, you have an idea of what you're creating in your head, but at the same time, it's always exciting when something can go beyond yourself.
Yes.
And like say new things that you didn't even think it could. And
that's
I think there's
the cool
something
thing
really
about
beautiful
the creative process.
Yeah.
And think where you guys would be with your particular thing you're right. doing right now.
If Shakespeare
and if Shakespeare was under copyright right now, think of all the Julius Caesar in the park right now wouldn't be able to happen.
Yeah. Our entire show would be absolutely impossible.
Yep. Nope. We would not have a show.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure Shakespeare's estate would be like,
maybe not.
Yeah, I don't think so. I just think it's interesting. Anyway, there will be a link to...
I wonder why... It would be cool if someone was like not... If I don't know if there's... There could be a provision in somewhere where it says... You have to do it this way while I'm alive, but once I'm deceased, yeah, go forth and have wild
some people,
and get
some
clean.
People were saying that. And I think there's something to be said. And the other difference was, and I think it was in this article, so if you're Edward Albee, you get this much control. But if you are indeed Becky Musser, who's not well known, and people are not even, you know, not even paying you rights or paying you very little rights, and people are saying you're lucky just to get your piece seen, then you know, if you want to get your piece seen, you're going to let me cast it the way I want to cast it. You know, there's a big difference, and so there's some 1%-y stuff going on there.
Oh yeah,
there you go. All right, well
they give, you know, they producers can get rights for shows before people have signed off, and they can get pulled right away. That's crazy train too, how it all works.
Yep, we've got to rush away because there's lots of stuff I want to talk about before we get moving. So I want to talk about very quickly not very quickly. Laura Benanti, who does the that explains the
shows and the seasons.
Each season. I think maybe we've seen the cycle because this one is not nearly as funny as the last two.
I didn't watch the
think
whole
maybe
thing,
it's getting
like,
a little old. But I'm going to play it in its entirety. So that I'll play the audio in its entirety. And she's standing in a white background, and she's got a baby on her in a what do they call the papoose on her bosom. So let's just get us to listen.
Hi, I'm Laura Benanti, and I'm here to explain to you the Broadway plays of the 2016-2017 season. And as an exhausted new mom, I have definitely seen all these plays. Indecent is about what I just saw on the subway. Black to the Future sounds racist. An Act of God is about Beyoncé's unborn twins. The Play That Goes Wrong is about a lot of plays that I've done. The Encounter is about the sound designer's revenge. Oslo is about Germany. Heisenberg is about the Heisenberg Trophy, right? Jitney is about the Hamptons. The Little Foxes are about teeny tiny foxes. Sweat is about everybody's pits. Present Laughter is about laughing right now. Significant Other is about your spouse. La Liaison Dangereuse is about French people. Oh, Hello on Broadway is about tuna. The Illusionist's Turn of the Century is about magicians. The Chariot Orchard is about sitting in a theater for a really long time. The Front Page is about not the back page. The Price is about how much does it cost? The Present is about right now. 6 Degrees of Separation is about Kevin Bacon. The Glass Menagerie is about how we can't stop doing the Glass Menagerie. Alton Brown, Eat Your Science is about, I literally have no idea, but I'll tell you what, if I could eat science, I would be way more interested in science. This is not my baby.
This is not my baby. So that was it. It's not nearly as funny as it used to be.
No, I mean, it wasn't bad, but
it wasn't bad. It wasn't great. But
she's
that,
a busy mother. She's
is a busy mother.
Jitney about the Hamptons, maybe.
Yeah. So Jitney. So that again, it's a lot of inside baseball because if you don't live in or haven't lived in New York, you don't understand the Jitney thing. And as we were listening, you had to explain the tuna thing for Oh, Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Which is it's from a bit in that show called Too Much Tuna. And that's where they bring in a guest star, a special guest star, and they give them a sandwich that is about 2 feet thick of tuna.
Tuna.
It's called tuna.
And you can, there's a whole bunch on YouTube. It's a lot of famous people. They don't know what's
going on. There's a whole bunch on YouTube.
There's tons, and you can see all these different famous people with them doing the tuna bit.
Okay.
Well, okay. So
we're going to have our own guest performers each night.
Yes, I know. We're going to talk about that in your section, so you're not allowed to talk about it now. I'm very excited to talk about your show because there's so much interplay here.
Yeah.
So Nicole, talk to us about the very interesting article from the UK that you sent me with regards to
UK's actually had some interesting articles lately. Which one was this one?
This was the one about having understudies come in when people need to take a mental day.
Yeah, they were saying understudies shouldn't just be used for... There's a big argument in England that understudies shouldn't just be used for when a lead actor is injured physically,
that lead actors, we all have mental issues and problems, and actors should be able to mentally check out, take a break, deal with personal stuff, and an understudy should go in. You shouldn't force these actors to just deal with it and go perform.
Especially with some of their schedules, the ones that are performing all the time, you know, that's a lot. A show is demanding physically and mentally and emotionally.
Well, you mean you have other factors that are going on in your life at the same time. Well,
the crux of the article was that we need to start, we as a society need to start looking at mental illness the
exactly
same way
the
we
same
look
way.
At physical illness, mm-hmm. mental injury and physical injury, and they need to have equal footing.
Right.
So the understudies was sort of an analogy for that argument. Mm-hmm. And I agree. Anybody disagree?
No, I don't disagree. Okay. And I found it really interesting. I was like, go England.
Yeah, and it kind of falls into the idea of preventative medicine in general and preventative care in general being a stronger tool than waiting for something to go terribly
and that's,
wrong.
That's what our healthcare system is all about.
Right. It's
about treating, not preventing.
Right. Yeah.
And I feel like that's this kind of a win-win situation for everybody because, I mean, the understudies get paid more when they go on. They want to be able to do the show.
True.
And so it gives them more opportunity to do so. It gives the lead actors the break that they need to not go insane.
Right.
I feel like that it works out. Sounds great.
Well, we just have a couple more minutes before we have to take a break, but there's two things that I wanted to talk about. First of all, that we had a record-breaking year on Broadway, but not in attendance, but in price, and it's all because of these ticket prices.
Yeah.
The gross incomes rose 5.5%. So here are some of the box office price for the top ticket. This is not reselling tickets. This is box office face value price. Hamilton, $849.
What?
Hello, Dolly, $748. Mm-hmm. Sunny in the Park with George, $499. Okay. Book of Mormon still getting $477.
Uh-huh. Isn't that crazy?
That's and my house. You know how I feel about this. I just... I just think it's a highway
Dolly
robbery.
Dolly went up $200 in like a month.
Yeah, well, that's
yeah.
insane. So that's an interesting mm-hmm. thing. And the last thing I want to talk about, one of our Tony nominees is called The Encounter, and it's I think it's up for something. But this is the one that was the sensory experience where all the audience wore headphones.
Yes.
For one day more, it closes out tomorrow. There's a YouTube of the play. That you put on headphones and you watch it. And it's very interesting, although to be quite honest, I only got around 15 minutes of it before I got a little tired of it. I think it's probably a different experience
in
the theater itself. It is basically a one-person show where he's telling a story. And he's basically using electronic Foley artistry to help illustrate his story.
Okay.
And so you wear headphones so that your things are coming in and out around your head. And I'm
just
showing
about to
this
say,
for the video.
I wish this was live streamed right now.
Anyway, so once the show posts, which will be Wednesday evening, there will be a link. Or in the meantime, you could just go to YouTube and look up The Encounter. They will pull it off tomorrow, so it's one more day to see it. It's actually worthwhile to one more day. It's very worthwhile to see just to get a feel of it because it's actually quite interesting. Also, really quick, like again, there's a link in our show notes for it. There's a show called Whirligig. Ben Brantley did the. It's an off-Broadway show, and Ben Brantley, true to what we were talking about the other day, did the review.
Uh huh.
But it was written by Hamish Linkletter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got Zsozsa Mamet in it, who
love her. I saw that and I was like, oh my gosh, Lisa's probably totally into it. So when I saw
anyway,
you
the
it
review,
up,
the review was okay. It wasn't great, but you can read it for yourself on our site. So we're going to take a little break and then we're going to come back and talk to these lovely ladies about love, moving towards
lovely
love.
Lovely ladies. You're just close. Keeping right in there in
that's right.
Your Les Mis world.
And just keeping with the theme of writing, that's where I chose this song.
I wrote the book on how to be.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick to the First Power.
Shiro is your hero.
You're listening to us on KOOP. HD1, HD3 Hornsby. And we are now going to switch gears, and we're going to talk right away with the producers of A Love Goes Towards Love. Producers and performers.
Yeah.
Ooh. And shall I throw out directors as well?
Not really.
No. Okay.
No, we have a...
We drew the line somewhere. Right. Yeah. I mean,
well, let me get your names out, and then we can talk about answering that question.
Oh, okay, great.
So we have Becky Musser. Hi, Becky.
Hi.
And Taylor Flanagan.
Hello.
Both are veterans of Offstage and On the Air.
Indeed.
Indeed. Indubitably, ma'am.
Quite
so
right.
No director?
No, we have lots of directors.
Okay.
We are just not any of them.
Oh, okay. So each piece.
Because we don't want to be Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, we saw how that turned out. But yeah, basically we got kind of a pool of what we called consulting directors and allowed our performers to just kind of reach out to whoever they wanted to work with on specific things and specific scenes and moments and that kind of thing.
And we reached out to them as well. So we've worked with a number of the consulting directors on our part of the show also.
Well, let me just tell you something. The people involved in the show are a who's who of Austin Theater. So that's wonderful. So tell folks, one of you choose who's going to, or both, you could do it together in unison. I love the premise of the show. So tell us about it.
Okay. So basically the show's inception happened a couple months ago into February.
March 3rd.
Yes. No, it was not. February 26th.
It was February 26th at 3:57 p.m.
It was dark. It was raining. No, it was March 3rd.
You wore green. I wore purple.
I thought that was into February. Apparently, I don't know the dates of my own shows. Anyway, Taylor and I realized that we have not yet done a show where we played opposite each other, and that is a travesty because we are really good friends and have excellent chemistry. And
Becca's leaving.
I'm going away.
She's moving to New York.
Yeah. We were getting sad and like, oh, woe is me, la, la, la. And then Sarah Snyder was with us to see Becca's show. And the three of us got talking and we came up with this idea to have this exploration of queer relationships, but through Shakespeare. And we got so excited and then we immediately just started to try and make it happen. So
then it actually did happen, which rarely happens when you talk about creating shows after seeing another show.
Right.
True.
But it did. We actually did.
That's cool.
Because y'all are go-getters.
Yes.
That's exactly. Why.
Movers and shakers and making this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it still just blows my mind how many people jumped on board with us.
Yeah.
So as I'm seeing it, it appears to me that you're taking scenes, romantic scenes in Shakespeare and doing them as a same-sex romantic scene. Does that sort of narrow it down to one sentence?
Yes.
And more.
Yes and no. Yes.
And more.
And more. Yes. So I love that these are improv graduates.
Yes and.
Yes and. No, Lisa, you're an idiot. Instead of that, she said yes and.
No, but that's accurate. But also there's other
and more
aspects of the show. Yeah. So the guest performers, we have two people that only have one night of the show.
One night only.
Yes.
You
beat me to it.
I thought we were going to be doing it at the same time.
I'm sorry. I failed you.
Their portion of the show is these different scenes of Shakespeare lovers performed by same-sex performers. But our section, Becca's and my section of the show is a little bit different because we're combining these scenes and these moments, these characters into one story arc.
So there's there is a narrative that goes along with
Yeah,
this.
Our portions have a narrative.
Interesting. Yeah. So we have two sections that we do. So we kind of have one story arc, then our guest performers have their scenes, and then we have a second story arc.
So like tragedies
book
and comedies?
And the shows.
We do.
Excellent. It sounds fascinating. I'm going to take this moment to go on quite a little tangent here, small, slight tangent. During the break, or actually before we went on the air, I asked Taylor to give me a number between 2 and 54. What did you say?
I said 39.
You said 39. Let's see what that is.
All right, I'm Christian Ortega.
I'm Graham Dalling, and we're with the National Theatre of Scotland, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air
on KOOP HD1, Hornsby, Austin.
There you go. First time.
That's first time. And man, that show was so good.
I don't know if... they were from the Let the Right One In.
Yeah. With the National Theatre of Scotland. And
it just dawned on me why I found that... the title, I had no idea what I was getting into when I saw Let the Right One In. And I kept thinking it was going to be about feet. And I know why. Because I kept getting it mixed up With my left foot for some reason.
Left.
I don't know why.
The right one in.
You left the right one in. Okay.
Oh my God, that's so like a bountiful trip to Pippin.
It is a trip to bountiful Pippin.
Trip to bountiful.
So, back to your show.
Yes. Love goes toward love.
The book ending brings. So, did your guest artists get to choose their scene, or did you choose for them?
Well, yeah. So we basically, when we asked people who were interested. We sent out a form and they said relationships and characters in Shakespeare that they're interested in and that they're intrigued by. Mm-hmm. And then for our guest performers, the lovely Stephanie Donahue and Nell McEwen, they put together those scripts and took those preferences into consideration when selecting those scenes.
Yeah. Okay. So this was a very collaborative.
Yes. Effort. Very collaborative.
Very, very collaborative. Yeah.
So why there was a very, very collaborative. Tell us more about the collaboration then.
Oh. Okay, well, so Becca and I put together the scripts for our portion of the show, and we put together everything online so we could each access it at any hour of the day and see, put comments on what the other person had been working on, et cetera.
Like, you're an idiot, why would you ever say that?
Exactly.
Or, okay. Hey, maybe let's add this bit.
Yeah, let's add some Hotspur and Kate.
Yeah.
And then Stephanie and Nell worked on the script for the other section of the show. Becca spearheaded one of the guest performers' pieces that focuses a little bit more on like Othello and Antony and Cleopatra.
That one's on closing night.
That one's on closing night.
Mm. That one's my baby.
That one's Becca's baby. And then the other part of the collaboration is just the process itself. Once the script was compiled, all of the performers have a lot of say in how they want to present their scenes. They had say about who they worked with, so they got to contact their directors and say, I'd like you to come in and work with us on this day, etc.
Were the actors allowed to modify the scenes at all?
Absolutely.
We asked them to keep us in the loop if they're cutting or adding things.
Right. Just so you know, we know and we can update the master script. But yeah, we
did you
totally
check
open.
With Shakespeare?
We did not. We didn't check with his estate either.
His estate has that. I do. I'm glad you mentioned that because they did send a letter to us to give to you.
Oh, great.
Okay.
It we'll says, read knock it. It off.
Yeah.
So potentially we're opening this weekend. We'll find out.
Yeah. Well, so your section, does it remain the same on all? How many nights is it?
Six.
Six nights.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about those sections. Is there anything you could
divulge?
Well, the first act is going to be, it's a somewhat original story.
Taking only Shakespeare's words, the only thing that we changed about that is that we did change the pronouns to.
So even your section is Shakespearean?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's all Shakespeare.
Okay.
But we did change the pronouns for clarity, because based on the characters that we're playing in these different scenes, we go back and forth from playing male and female characters, and we thought it would be a little bit confusing for the audience to keep track of, like, oh wait, so now they're being called a he, and now they're being called a she, and wait, who's mm-hmm. So for the ones that were the same characters the whole time, we wanted to make it really audience friendly.
But you are, tell the folks the word that I believe you guys coined.
Oh. I'm loving it.
Shakesqueer.
Shakesqueer.
We didn't coin it.
We did not. Well, we thought we did. Okay. And then we were talking to Steph and Nell about this idea and they said, oh yeah, Shakesqueer. And then we got really sad because we realized it wasn't our
I hadn't heard it anywhere else.
I hadn't heard
you
it either. So,
I'm giving you
as far
credit.
As offstage and on the air is concerned, it's yours. But since it is queer based and you are taking these male female relationships and making them same sex, you would have to change the pronouns, I would assume.
Well, yeah. So we did that for the first section because we play different characters that go back and forth between male and female in the same storyline. But actually for the Romeo and Juliet one at the end, we have a storyline that follows the Romeo and Juliet storyline, but with some added bits. We did go ahead and leave them as male and female pronouns, and it's just that I go by he, but I'm a he with boobs.
Are you a he with boobs, or are you a female, or does it not matter?
I'm a female, but I just use masculine pronouns in that section.
Why not? So, and that's your right.
That's your right. Yeah, so why not?
Yeah.
So
that's what we're going for. Hold on just a second. The phone's ringing. Hello? Oh, it's the governor, Greg Abbott. He said it's not. But, you know, what the hell? So, tell me, do you guys have you have scripts, I see. Are you going to do a little scene?
Because
we're actually running out of time. Oh, so let's get to the scene.
Yes.
Excellent.
So do you need to set it up?
Sure. Yeah, this is one of our sections where we actually kind of, well, Taylor artfully weaved several scenes from different plays into one scene.
Okay.
So this is in our Romeo and Juliet plot line.
Okay. So this is Taylor Flanagan and Becky Muster doing a scene from Love Goes Toward Love.
Ah, Juliet, if the measure of thy joy be heaped like mine, and that thy skill be more to blazon it, then sweeten with thy breath this neighbor air, and let rich music's tongue unfold the imagined happiness that both receive in either by this dear encounter.
Conceit more rich in matter than in words brags of his substance, not of ornament. They are but beggars that can count their worth, but my true love is grown to such excess I cannot sum up some of half my wealth.
Then love me, Juliet.
Yes, faith will I. Fridays and Saturdays and all.
And wilt thou have me?
Aye, and 20 such.
What sayest thou?
Are you not good?
I hope so.
Why then can one desire too much of a good thing? Come, I shall be the priest and marry us. Give me your hand, Romeo.
Will you, Romeo, have to wife this Juliet?
Good even, good monsieur, what you call it. How do you, sir?
Faith, the priest was good enough.
You are very well met. I am very glad to see you.
Who too? Will you, Romeo, have to wife this Juliet?
I will.
Aye, but when?
Why now, as fast as he can marry us.
Then you must say, to you I give myself. For I am yours.
To you I give myself, for I am yours.
To you I give myself, for I am yours.
That was so sweet.
I was still sitting there because I had with my hand on my chin going, well, that's it.
That was so sweet. Oh, we can keep going. But
I was like, we have more.
Well, we are totally out of time.
All right.
So where are you guys doing the show?
It is at Austin Public Studios. It's actually a filming studio, but we discovered that.
There's a studio space that's big enough for a black box. It's on Northwestern. It's 1143 Northwestern Avenue.
Okay.
It's if you go out 11th Street from I-35 going east, it turns into Rosewood and you turn right onto Northwestern and you're there.
Cool. And where can folks go to get more information?
You can go to facebook.com/lovegoestowardlove. Or gofundme.com/lovegoestowardlove.
Or buyplaytix.com/calendar.
You can also, there is a link to, and when you click on the link to the page that you just mentioned, you see a lovely video and you can learn how you can help out as well. Thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thank you for being here.
And I hope y'all can stick around and go backstage with us.
Absolutely.
Great. I didn't say you play just this weekend, right?
Oh, two weekends.
Two weekends.
We run Friday through Sunday, both weekends until June 4th.
At 8 p.m.
8 p.m.
Awesome. Okay, that was Taylor Flanagan and Becky Muster. Their show, Love Goes Towards Love, opens this weekend and plays next weekend. For more information, I'd suggest doing a search on Love Goes Towards Love on Facebook, and that will get you there. So we will be right back.
As happy and secure.
Lovely voice.
It is a lovely voice. I want to make sure we have plenty of time, so we're going to like zip through local. But the thing I've been meaning to talk about for a long time, and I keep forgetting.
You've had it on the script multiple weeks in a row.
Right. Is the 2017-2018 Broadway Across America season, which I think is probably one of the best ones.
I knew you were going to be.
Yes, I agree with you.
There's good stuff.
So we have Rent.
Yes. 20th anniversary.
We have The King and I.
Yes. Shall We Dance?
The King and Me, as I like to say.
Shall We Dance?
Shall We Dance?
Shall We?
Dun, dun, dun. Finding Neverland.
Yes.
Your show, School of Rock.
I know. They're going to stick it to the man. I love it.
And then we get to hear that song that you love. I will marry you.
Oh, I've decided to marry you.
From Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder.
I don't love that song. I'm driving nuts with it.
I actually do like it.
She loves it.
But, well, they did play it at
Here's
nauseam.
The thing. I don't hate the song. It's the only song they do for promo. And I'm like, come on, you got some good songs. We get it. You decided to marry him.
And it's a good show. I done saw it. I liked it. An American in Paris.
I know.
That's going to be good season.
Stuff.
So congratulations. And of course, the next season, they keep already talking about it. We get Hamilton. So that's the 2018-2019 season. Oof. So Hamilton.
Cheers.
So let's do Today in Theater History.
Today in Theater History.
It's a really quick one. I only have a couple that we're going to talk about.
Give it to me, Lisa.
1961. Members of the Dramatists Guild, hoping to ease the financial crisis in New York theater, agreed to royalty cuts.
Interesting.
Think that would happen today?
No.
No. No way. You're not cutting my royalties. Let's see. So this in 1966, a little show called MAME. You took the wind right out of my sails.
Mame.
You don't like Mame, I see.
No,
by
I
your
don't.
Face.
Actually, who doesn't love Agnes Gooch?
I would want to play Agnes Gooch,
mean,
so bad.
Come on now.
We need a little Christmas. Right this
way. Yeah, I don't have a problem with Mame.
Okay. Let's see.
Surprising, though, isn't it? With all the other ones I don't like.
Yeah, I would think you would like that. Would be one of them.
No, I love it.
Today's birthday, Lily Palmer.
Oh, hello.
Arvin Brown.
Oh, hello.
Alfred Molina.
Oh, I love him.
John C. Reilly.
Oh, love him.
Leslie Critz.
Or as Dale likes to call him, Dewey Cox.
I don't know what that means, but I'll just nod.
It's his character from his movie.
Oh.
What movie?
Walk Hard. The Dewey Cox story.
Yes. Oh. I'm like, I got that. Yeah.
I've never even heard of it.
Oh, my God. It's like a spoof on like Johnny Cash. Like, oh, my God. It's everything.
Oh, never heard of it.
Oh,
locally, we have tomorrow's nothing. Nobody today that I could find. I'm sure there are some. But tomorrow is Zach Crawford's birthday. Make sure you wish him a bon anniversaire.
Bon anniversaire.
He gave us a dagger.
He did. He gave us a dagger.
He lent you a dagger. Lovely.
On Friday, somebody by the name of Nicole Morosis.
Morosis Opa.
Gregory Driscoll. Happy birthday, Gregory. Hi. And Kathy Rose Center.
Yeah, Marosa's coming. Marosa's been in town. She's moving back.
She hasn't called me.
Yeah, I just said Marosa's been in town. That's what I was saying.
She hasn't called me.
She has sprinkled a little of herself around Austin again.
All right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a little break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk to Rob McClure of Something Rotten fame. And you know what? I just wish you would listen to me.
Okay.
I got so much to share.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nick to the First Power.
It's just me, Shiva, your hero.
So, you know, I should mention right now while we have just a second that people should find us on the Facebook and like us on the Facebook. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we do podcast this thing and you get to hear backstage at Offstage if you do the if you do the podcast, and you can get that on iTunes. You can subscribe on iTunes. And if you do subscribe on iTunes, please, please, please consider giving us a review.
Talk about how awesome we are.
Yeah, please. Yeah, only review us if you like us.
Just good stuff.
If you don't like us, thank
you.
Just
leave.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. You are the weakest link.
And
goodbye.
Then you are the weakest link.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
So then the other way they can get us, tell folks how they can get us.
Best
the other
way. Just go to offstageonair.com and enter your little email in the little box to the right. And we just appear every week in your mailbox.
Okay.
Lisa and Nick Squared.
Right there.
Shazam.
Let's Shazam. So I am so totally stoked about what is coming to Broadway Across America, the Bass Concert Hall.
Yeah.
Really, really, really excited.
Awesome sauce.
And it's apropos to what we've been talking about because it's Something Rotten.
Yes.
And I've been talking about it a lot to everybody I see. And people need to know that this is a fun musical. Check your brains at the door musical. This touring cast is really incredible.
It's like, yeah.
Rob McClure.
Creme de la creme.
And who's playing Shakespeare?
Adam Pascal.
Adam Pascal and Rob McClure.
Yeah, but you also have Josh Grizzetti's in it.
Yep.
It's
an incredible cast. We don't get this caliber on the road very
often. No, you don't get all the people in the Broadway cast like jumping, like, okay, we're going to close the show and we'll go on the road now too.
Anyway, so we've got two tickets to give away to Tuesday night's show. So only call in if you can come and see it Tuesday night. We'll give it to the first caller at 512-472-5667. 512-472-5667. Tuesday night's show, Something Rotten at the Bass Concert Hall. Call us now. In the meantime, we'll listen to an interview that Nicole and I did with...
We were so lucky.
The star, Rob McClure.
Yes,
y'all ready?
Yes. Okay. Tony nominated.
Tony nominated. Here we go. We are so excited. Nicole and I have on the phone the incomparable Rob McClure. He's starring in Broadway Across America's production of Something Rotten that's going to be or is at the Bass Concert Hall by the time we air this. Rob, welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
It is awesome. Thank you. Well, that's the end of our interview.
Thank you so much.
Everything is awesome.
I hope you come to see Something Rotten. Thank you. Thanks so much.
Well, we have been looking forward to this. Not only are we looking so forward to seeing Something Rotten, and I will say that I've been in New York a lot over the past couple of years, and I've purposely not seen Something Rotten while I was there because I knew it was coming here with the incredible cast that it has. So I opted for Austin over Broadway. What do you think of that?
Well, we're glad. It's been really fun. I mean, we've been touring around the country, and we're making people laugh, you know, and there's something that feels sacred about that right now, you know, just like
yes.
traveling.
I don't know really, what you're talking about.
Exactly. But it is, it's an opportunity for people to turn their phones off and just laugh. And we're finding that people are in desperate need of that at the moment. And we're happy to provide it.
Exactly. Well, as I've been telling folks, about the show coming in, and a lot of people here in Austin aren't necessarily theater savvy. And I talk about how, last year, Something Rotten would have won the Tony if it weren't for that pesky Hamilton.
I think it's the bane of a few people's existence.
But it excites me to no end. So I'm guessing it's really exciting to work on the project.
Yeah, I mean it really, really is. And as we tell people about it, you always have to get over a little hump when you tell people, okay, so it takes place in 1595 during the Renaissance, and they immediately fall asleep. And you're like, wait. I promise there are no thes and thous to conquer. There's no language barrier. It's from the creators of, you know, Book of Mormon and Aladdin. I mean, these people know funny, and it's contemporary funny. So there's no, it is a period piece, but all with being tongue-in-cheek. About being a period piece. We all talk like normal people. But it's fun to, you know, I always say that the show, if you love musicals and you love Shakespeare, you'll love the show. But more importantly, if you hate musicals and you hate Shakespeare, you'll love the show because we're lovingly sending it up just as much as we are sort of celebrating it. So we have a lot of, you know, husbands who've been drugged to the theater by their wives who come to the stage door afterward and go, thank you so much. Because they sit down and they go like, okay, here comes the Renaissance. And by the end, they're like, this was so funny.
Well, it's very irreverent, very much in the style of Book of Mormon.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Nothing sacred in our show, that's for
no,
sure.
I've explained this to people. I'm like, you don't like musicals? This is the musical for you.
Exactly. Exactly right. Because it pokes fun at the idea that randomly in the middle of a conversation you would break into song. Because usually, you know, people who don't dig musicals, that's the hump they can't get over. They're like, wait, they just start singing.
Right, and that like, yeah. song in particular is so much fun. I think it sort of sets a lovely tone about the show.
I think we give the audience permission to not only laugh with us, but laugh at us. We don't care as long as you laugh.
Yeah, we do that. And you play Nick Bottom, which not coincidentally is a character from Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yes. So anybody who does know Shakespeare, there are thousands of little references for the Shakespeare aficionados. But for those who don't. Nick Bottom is one of two brothers who are just competing writers with Shakespeare at the time, and they're sort of living in the shadow of this, like, rock god. And in our show, quite literally, he's a rock god, kind of like a Freddie Mercury or a David Bowie. And I hate him. I hate him for that.
But you don't hate him forever, do you? Now, I have to say that I've heard the soundtrack, I'd say 7 zillion times.
Oh, good, good.
And so I have not seen the show, so I'm making up the narrative myself.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And it sounds to me like you guys become at least gentle friends at some point.
Yeah, I mean,
don't burst my bubble, Rob.
Well, I think what I can say is that when you see it, all will become clear as to how we resolve our sort of loathing of each other.
Excellent.
But it has to do with him maybe or maybe not saving my butt at some point.
Well, one of the things that I talk about or that I classify shows like Mormon and others is sort of a check your brains at the door musical.
Yeah. I mean, you will not – this is not one of those shows where you're going to have to lean forward and go like, oh, my God, I have to – this is going to go over my head if I don't engage. And right. I love engaging just as much as the shows where you get to check out. So that's not, dissing them. But in a show where from the downbeat, you go, oh my God, this show is going to take care of me.
Yep.
And you can just sit there and let the show do its thing. It really is. And that's the relief that I'm talking about, that people want to go to the theater to just, I think it's everything that people want. If they go to a musical comedy,
right?
I want the music to be great. I want the actors to be good. I want the singing to be great. I want the orchestra to be great. And I want it to be funny. And I want it to have a happy ending. And that's people are sent out of the theater just, rapturously joyful. And it's the best thing we can hope for.
That's a Waka Waka moment.
It is. I mean, there are lots of Waka Wakas, but and not in a sort of like, a punchline that you've, because so many times there's things that are funny and you laugh because just the rhythm of the joke, you go like, oh, I guess that's funny. This is legitimately funny. I mean, we have people who I can see, we can usually see about to maybe the fifth or sixth row because of the lighting, and then it all becomes that big black darkness. But all of the lighting behind that, I get to see those first five rows of people here. I mean, just laughing. We had a woman last night who must have had her husband and her sister sitting on either side of her. And every single joke we were watching in the monitor backstage, because we can see the few people right behind the conductor.
Right.
And every joke, she would slap her husband and then slap her sister, and then all three of them would laugh. And then slap by the end, I was like, he must have a black and blue shoulder.
How fun is that? How great is that to be involved in a show like that? And I have to tell you, we're of course recording this a few weeks before you get here to Austin. But I do think I plan to go to every performance.
Oh, please do. We would love to see you. And I know that Austin loves comedy. The last time I came through was back in 2008 with the Avenue Q tour.
Right, I saw you.
They loved comedy then. So. Yeah.
Well, speaking of you, since speaking of me, speaking of the two of us, because that's what this is really all about, I did have the honor of seeing you in Chaplin.
Oh, amazing. I'm so glad. That was one of the life-changing.
Kudos to you, though.
Thank you.
What a wonderful part that must have been to play. I mean, and you carried that show.
Yeah. It's one of those shows that kind of changes your DNA. You know, I'll never think of comedy the same once you sort of explore it through Chaplin's eyes. You know, everything sort of seems derivative of something that he came up with once you've sort of explored his brain a little. But it was, and it was a crazy responsibility just because you know that there are people who love everything he ever did. We did the show and members of his family were coming. I mean, there's a sense of accountability there where you're not just telling a fictional narrative, you're telling a true story, and people are coming to see it who lived it.
Right, and he had such a complex life.
Yeah, he was not a saint. So, he was a complicated dude. But it was thrilling and an experience that I'll never forget for sure.
Yeah, so I was just really thrilled to be able to talk to you and just tell you that we that you and I have a past.
That's so sweet. Thank you so much.
And also, I guess our past crossed somewhat again, but very, very tangentially. I am very dear friends with the original stage manager of the off-Broadway production of I'm Not Rappaport.
Oh, get out of town. That's amazing.
Yeah, so that's wonderful. And so you're on the road right now, and we were really impressed by you and Adam Pascal. You don't necessarily get names of your caliber on the road so much anymore.
It's, this show, and this was so funny, our executive producer, Kevin McCollum, he came up to us while we were both doing the Broadway, closing out the Broadway production, and he said, would you guys be interested on the road with this? We both looked at each other, and we were like, well, we have wives and families, and I don't necessarily know. And he made the pitch for, I think you guys need to go make America laugh again. And we were like, oh, now that sounds important, and that sounds fun, and that sounds like something I want to be a part of. And we were both so proud of the show, proud to be in the show. We think the show is so smart and so fun. And then the choice became very easy for me because my wife auditioned for my wife and got it. So it began
I was about to say, you lucked out because isn't your wife in the show and on tour with you?
That made it a no-brainer for sure because, you know, now we get to travel and see the great country doing something that we love together and with our cat, no less.
Lovely.
I love it.
And your wife, will you tell our audience the name of your wife?
Yeah, she's Maggie Lakis. And we've in the 12 years we've been together, we've gotten to work together 5 times, which is a lot.
That is a lot.
Did y'all do Avenue Q together?
We did Avenue Q together. We met doing a production of Grease in New Jersey. It was like the Jerseyest thing that could ever happen.
I was like, it just sounds really Jersey. I'm surprised Bon Jovi wasn't in it.
Seriously, I had a T-top Z28 Camaro. We had our first kiss in a diner parking lot. It was bad.
That's funny.
Disco fries.
Well, unfortunately, exactly. We're plumb out of time, but Rob McClure, I thank you so much for spending time with us at Offstage and on the Air.
It's our pleasure, and I look forward to seeing you guys at the theater.
I'm going to let you all, I have to ask one more quick question.
Of course.
Have you been to Austin before? Yes, you said you had. What are you looking forward to? What Austin experience are you looking forward to on your off time?
Well, one of the things I love the most about the town is that it's an incredible food town. Mm-hmm. Well, at least it was the last time I was there, almost 10 years ago now. So one of the things we love most is getting out and about and exploring the best food. But if you guys have recommendations, let me know.
Well, we'll talk about it when you're here. We have lots of
them. A lot of good food now.
Good, good, good.
Great. Well, thanks again for being on the show, and we look forward to seeing you on stage. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Tony nominee Rob McClure. He's starring in Broadway Across America's Something Rotten, playing at the Bass Concert Hall from May 30th to June 4th. For more information, you may visit austin.broadway.com.
Hey, that was a great interview.
Oh, awesome.
You know, we're so out of time, but I got special permission from Tracy. I have to tell you, we recorded something after we hung up from Rob McClure, which is a way I feel after almost every celebrity interview. So I'm just going to play that. I keep thinking, you know, when we do these things, that they're like my best friend now. We have something.
Who, you and me or them?
Them. So I just had... I really do. I feel like Rob McClure and I are now best friends.
We did just keep talking and you recorded it.
Yeah. Anyway, we got to run. Austin Modern News is next if you're listening on the airways. If you're not, you can catch us on... You are. You're going to catch Backstage at Offstage right after this. So don't go away. We'll be back next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air.
Ciao.
And here's some more Something Rotten.
Yes.
What little you're going to hear of it. Come see the show.
If you ever got in trouble, I would be there on the double just to bail you out. If there's anything you lack, you know I've always got your back. That's what it's all about.
Okay, the curtain has just come down on Disco Fries, the musical. The story of a group of crazy gals searching the city for fries at 2 a.m. in the morning when one of the characters is anxiety-ridden and trying to sleep. Ding, ding. Well, here we are backstage. We've gone through the stage door, down the stairs. We're standing amongst the dumpsters, trying to just deal with the smell back here right now, because trash day isn't till tomorrow.
No, it is not.
No, it is not. Okay. And back here with us are our guests, Taylor Flanagan.
Hello.
And Becky Musser.
Hi there.
Howdy. So I should tell our audience that still our Studio 2 here at Co-op is out of whack. So we are talking on microphones, which we are passing around. So that's why it doesn't quite sound the same as it normally does.
Yeah, we have the talking stick.
We do have the talking mic. Stick. Well, so I have to start with Becky Musser. And both of you guys have been backstage before, right?
Correct.
So Becky, you are leaving us.
I am.
tell us about what you're doing.
Well, after I close Troilus and Cressida into June, I am moving to the Big Apple.
Is that New York or Boise? Because they're both called the Big Apple.
They both are. I'm going to the New York one. As you know, as much as I love Idaho.
No, I just
and
made that
potatoes.
Up.
But you know what? It sounds good, so I'm going to go with it. I'm just going to roll with it.
I just feel like someone in New York would have sued or beat someone up over that a long time ago.
Yeah.
So you're going to New York, mm-hmm. And what? So I'm dying to know, what kind of preparations do you make for yourself, personally and professionally, when you make that trip?
Yes. Well, it happened somewhat suddenly. Basically, I went to the Shakespeare and Company month-long intensive in January, and I was talking to a lot of folks there who live in New York, and I realized that it was much more unattainable in my brain than it actually is practically. Especially since, as I discovered, there's an Alamo Draft House in Brooklyn, which is
there
where I
is.
Work here. So I can just transfer and already
there's
have a job.
There's one in Yonkers, too.
Yeah, there is one in Yonkers.
Yonkers had it before Brooklyn.
They did. I had friends who opened that store. But
so
yeah,
you work at Alamo Draft House now.
I work at Alamo
I don't think
Draft
I knew
House.
That about you. What
yeah.
do you do?
I'm a bartender.
You're a tar bender.
I am. I've also been a server, but yeah, so I'm transferring there for work.
Well, that's great. So you already have a modicum of income coming in when you get
yep.
there.
Yeah, oh, I'll have great. A day job already. I'm subletting an apartment from one of my friends for the first 2 months. So,
but
that
unfortunately,
way.
You're on the Upper East Side. So,
yeah, but it's in a good place where I can walk to the Met, which is amazing. Yeah,
and that's the Metropolitan Museum,
yes,
not the
yes.
Metropolitan Opera.
No.
But that's where the Costume Institute is. And I was just saying to Lisa last week, I was just talking to one of the best exhibits I ever saw was the Versace exhibit right after he passed, but the Dior exhibit. And I talk about that place all the time. It's so amazing.
Nice.
Spent hours and hours there.
I worked there in the 70s.
Ooh.
And it was, it's not all that glorious. I worked in the accounts receivable department. And, what was fascinating about that job was being in the museum after hours.
Mm. My aunt Mimi, her best friend and college roommate, is one of the curators there. And she just recently went on a tour and she was telling me about all the artwork that isn't even out and saying it's one thing when you get the experience and it's closed. She goes, I can't believe she went and did that without me. Because like, oh my gosh, I want to do that. It's going to Harry Ransom Center.
Awesome.
Well, I found out that you can go into the Harry Ransom Center and touch a first folio of Shakespeare's works.
Wow.
Like, that's insane. Like, just any person can just walk up and say, hi, I would like to see a first folio. And they'll make you watch a little video, and then you can go and
you
can
put white
can
gloves on,
it.
Don't you? No? You're,
I don't. Yeah, I haven't
look,
done it
looks
yet.
Looks and nods don't work on radio.
Wait, what? They don't?
What? No, they don't. So I want to.
My looks work on radio.
That's true.
Don't tempt me, Lisa.
That is true. Becky, tell us about what preparations you're making from a professional theater standpoint.
Oh, well, I'm very fortunate that I already know a lot of people who work up in New York and have companies. So I'm going to be taking classes with a lot of them just to kind of get myself out there and keep working on my craft.
Now, are you a triple threat?
I am not a good dancer. Okay. I mean, I can move.
So you'll take dance class.
I'll take dance class. But honestly, I'm moving up there mostly for Shakespeare. Honestly, I'm hoping to do regional work and tours.
And yet one could argue having a well-rounded repertoire of education would help, even if you just want to do Shakespeare.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I'm definitely going to keep singing. I do aerials, so I'm going to keep doing trapeze while I'm up there.
We took aerials together for a little while.
We did. We did silks together. It was amazing.
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah, so, well, that's all very exciting. We all wish you so much luck.
Well, thank you.
I don't. I want her back. She hasn't gone yet, and I already want her to come back.
I know. Well, we're all very sad, but she'll come back. She can guest artist.
Exactly. I mean, I just need people to pay for me to come back.
She has to go produce...
Love Goes Toward Love.
No, Disco Fries the musical.
That's exactly. Research. We need to do Disco Fries.
That's our next project. After Love Goes Toward Love, we're doing Disco Fries the musical. It's going to be beautiful.
So, Taylor, what you're a playwright as well, are you not?
Yeah, I've been working for like 2 years now on a single script, and then this play
came
along.
Tell us about the script, though.
And I was like, oh, it turns out you can adapt something really fast.
Is there a part for a 58-year-old beauty with a deep husky voice?
Maybe. I feel like I've been working on that play for 5 million years, and so
I've told you 100 million times not to exaggerate.
Have you?
I have. I've got it. Okay, I'm sorry. So tell us about the play.
Yes, I've been working on it a long time. It's an adaptation of the Shakespeare play Cymbeline. And
my favorite.
Yes, it's so good. And it's funny because I'm going to tangent a little bit. My theater teacher from middle and high school, who's actually in our show, Love Goes Toward Love, he contacted me at the beginning of the year and was like, hey, so I'm adapting a musical version of Cymbeline. And was wondering if you would be like interested in helping me with it. And it was like, oh, my God, this is so funny.
It's not a piece a lot of people touch work or write on, or I say it and people are like, what's your favorite work? And I'm like, Cymbeline. And they're looking like, at me and they're like, well, I don't even know that show. And I'm like, so it's so great. Fairies. Lovely. Yeah. Like, but
apparently
amazing,
he
but.
Passed on his love of Cymbeline to me, I guess, throughout the years somehow. But
so will you be working with him, or is it
a little bit? I mostly did help in the early part of his process, and then transitioned to focusing on Love Goes Toward Love, just because that opens sooner than that one does.
Yeah. Well, while we're talking about Love Goes for Love, we're not under the same rules as we are during the broadcast. And
right.
I did want to let people know that there is a GoFundMe page there. You haven't quite met your goal yet.
Not
so
quite.
Folks should go to that and give whatever. I mean, we need to support theater. $10, $5, $25, $2,500.
That would be wonderful.
If you have $2,500,
yeah,
then we can definitely pay.
But it's not like you're looking for a lot of money. I mean, no. I think your goal was just over $2,000, and that's. So,
there's enough people in this community that we should all be able to cover that one.
Yeah. So even if you are making a modest income, you know, $5 is not out of the realm of reason to help Austin Theater move on. So tell folks how they can find the GoFundMe page.
GoFundMe.com/love goes toward love.
Yeah, pretty easy.
Yep.
My grandmother could find it.
My grandmother's protesting right now. Can we just talk about how badass my grandmother is?
Yes, let's.
93 and at City Hall protesting right now.
Yes.
Yes. Drove a group of ladies, picked up the t-shirts, whole nine yards. Sticking it to the man.
Yes. Let's. Mm-hmm.
So I'd also like you to put your Cymbeline project on hold and write something that's politically active and reactive to what that F is going on right now.
Cymbeline, the one that I'm doing, is actually politically wrapped up because I'm placing the king, not as a king, but as a candidate for office.
Uh-huh.
And that's part of why he's so paranoid and freaked out about how his daughter's relationships are being perceived by the people, because everything is under scrutiny of the election.
I see this all. That's exciting.
So that's the premise there.
So now you are a performer. You're a playwright. Are you also a director?
For my students at the school where I teach,
uh-huh.
I do
and
direct.
Remind folks of that school.
Austin Tennis Academy College that's Prep. Right. It's ATACP.
.com.
You kind of could get an ATA. CP.
You can get like a lot
yeah,
of cool
get a little. Yeah, I could help you because I just watched Straight Out of Compton, so I really know about.
Right. Lisa's like real down now. I love that you watched that. That made my day, by the way.
So acting, playwriting, do you have a preference?
Oh, well, acting is what I am most comfortable with. It's the thing I've been doing the longest, and it's like coming home. And playwriting is like, it's like going on a trip, you know. It's exotic and it's fun and it's exciting, but it's also something I have to work really hard to do it. I mean, acting is hard too, but it's a different kind of hard. It's a very familiar kind of hard, like working out.
Becky, do you write?
I do.
I just called you Becky. I don't That's know if a, you noticed that.
It's fine. I go, I mean.
I just called her Becky.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm saying.
It's good. I'll go by whatever you want to call me. Well, it's funny because we're actually, I started a little writing group for a while and we worked on our pieces together. I have an adaptation of Titus Andronicus that I'm working on.
I'm loving it all.
mine has been going on for the better part of a decade, off and on, mostly off lately because I do. It started out as a novella. Then I started thinking about it. Yeah.
Wow.
And then I started thinking of it as a screenplay. And now I'm thinking about adapting it as a one-woman show. So, yeah.
Oh.
Could be a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever written anything, Nicole? Do you write?
You know, I used to. I used to write a lot. You mean a whole, I feel like you're my son. I used to write a lot. Then I stopped. And I recently was like, I should write more. And I have two baskets, one full of all the journal. I wrote in journals for years every day. And one basket full of all the journals and one basket full of work that I've all written. And I figured I haven't opened them and looked at them in years. And recently when I moved, I was like, whoa, that could be an interesting year. One year going back and rereading a lot of these pieces. But I need to write more. I just recently was like, I need to write more. I have beautiful books to write in because I buy old journals and books because I love that. I like a real book. I'm not an electronic ebook lady.
Because you're an old lady. You know what? I kept thinking we have like a whole bunch of time, but I just remembered that Rob McClure came backstage and talked to us.
Don't forget Rob McClure.
So let's take a little second and listen to him. Hey, look who's joined us back here by the dumpsters. It's Rob McClure. Hey, Rob.
So lucky.
It smelled funny back here.
It does smell funny. Us. You get used to it after a while, but just you're going to want to change your shoes after you leave.
Good, okay.
So we're excited to have you back here because I need to, you know, we're my co-host here, Nicole Shiro, is a Jersey girl from the get-go.
Yeah.
And you're a Jersey boy, is that right? Did you grow up
that
in Jersey?
True. Grew up in Jersey.
What town?
Every vacation to Wildwood, New Jersey every summer until I was like 22.
Yeah, I was about to say, where at the shore were you? Because every Jersey person goes to the shore.
Course,
at some you're
their,
a Wildwood guy.
Exactly. Yeah, Wildwood in Cape May.
And so where
up
did you
in
grow
up? Jersey.
In where? North Jersey?
A little city called New Milford. It was right across the George Washington Bridge. Oh, yeah.
Yep. I flew back in the day out of Teterboro, and
sure.
I did a lot of landings in the Morristown area, Morristown Airport, and knew all that area pretty well.
Near the Paper Mill Playhouse, where I got my start.
Paper Mill does great work. Mm-hmm. So,
yes, they do.
Speaking of your start, did you start doing theater when you were like a high school kid?
I didn't know I was good at it. It was another extracurricular thing to put on a college resume. It was like, okay, I'll do the bowling team in the winter and student council and the play and hope that fleshes out my college resume.
Bowling team, that's where I'd go.
And then I was very quickly sort of smitten with the collaborative sort of family thing that happens when you do a show.
Yeah.
Anyone who's done a play, even in school, knows that when it's over, you're all like crying and sad that you're not going to see each other every day. Because I think there's something about it. You know, your friends are relying on you in a way that I don't think I had been relied on before. You know, if you fail a test, that's on you. But if you came to do the show and you didn't know what you were doing, you not only embarrassed yourself, but you embarrassed your friends in front of an audience.
Right, and you're putting yourself out there. You're showing yourself
exactly,
as vulnerable.
Exactly, exactly. And so there was a collaborative family nature to that I very quickly fell in love with.
Awesome. And did you musicals from the get-go?
Yeah, not so much because I wanted to be doing musicals, but because that's what they did in my school. You know, they had the school musical. And then I branched out and started doing more, straight plays and TV and commercials and all that stuff as I branched out. But I think for a lot of people, it starts with musicals just because that's what they do in schools.
And at what point in your life did you stray from the virtual safety of New Jersey and go across the river to New York?
So my Broadway debut, I had worked a little bit at the Paper Mill Playhouse, and I didn't want to leave. So I got a job in their box office selling tickets.
Oh my.
And thinking like, oh, then they'll see me all the time and think of me to put in the shows, because that's how it works. And I'm rolling my eyes as I say that, because that's not how it works. But they were doing a co-production of a play called I'm Not Rappaport with Judd Hirsch and Ben Vereen, and it was a co-production with the Coconut Grove in Miami, the Fords in D.C., and then the Paper Mill. And I auditioned. I didn't get it. it went down to Florida, went to D.C., and then it was coming back to Jersey, and the kid who was understudying the part I was going in for was from Florida and didn't want to do it anymore. So he dropped. They called and asked me, do you want to understudy the part at Paper Mill? And I said, well, how much does it pay? Because I'm not in the union. And they were like, $200 a week. And I said, okay, well, I'm making $400 a week in the box office. Can I keep my box office job? And I'll understudy from the box office. I'm in the building. If you need me to go on, call my phone extension. I'll put on the costume and do it. And they let me. So I was understudying the role from the box office. And 2 weeks into that run, they came in and said, the show's transferring to Broadway and we're bringing everyone. Here's your union card.
So you
and
got your equity later, card.
That's awesome.
On a Broadway show.
On a Broadway show.
Good for you.
Everyone talks about their big break. It was crazy.
That is cool. That was actually going to be my next question for you, and you answered it. Isn't Paper Mill an equity house?
It is, but they have, you know, a lot of theaters around the country, regional theaters, they have what's called the Equity Membership Candidate Program.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
If they have a show that has 30 characters in it, four of those contracts can be non-equity to save them some money.
Yeah, when I got my equity card, that wasn't an option. The only way you could get your equity card was to get a contract.
Right.
No other way.
Yeah, there's the point system now.
Yeah, no, I had point system.
Well, I didn't have point system. Yeah. We were so poor we couldn't afford points.
Trust me, I couldn't buy a point if I wanted to on my box office salary.
Well, that's a fascinating story. We could talk to you forever, but unfortunately, the rats are taking over. We're going to have to let you go.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you so much for spending time with us back here.
Yes, thank you.
It's my pleasure, and I really do look forward to meeting you guys when we're out there.
Yeah, I can't wait to see you then.
Thanks.
Bye bye.
Thanks.
Bye bye.
Oh my God, I just loved talking to him. Wasn't he great?
You know why? Because you guys are best friends now.
We are besties.
I think I just learned so much about myself listening to him.
Right.
I feel like I learned something important about me.
There was. It was fun, and yet there was still that whole...
There was some pathos.
There was a lot of pathos, especially when he talked about Jersey and his life and his disco fries. Anyway, but we've got to leave the backstage area. So thank you guys so much for coming backstage with us.
Thank you.
And good luck with the show. And good luck with New York. Come back and see us.
Thank you. Absolutely.
My poor ass is getting numb. How can you say that? How can you say that? It's easy, I can say it, cause it's absolutely true. Don't be a penis, the man is a genius. His genius is he's fooling all of you. But he's brilliant, what majesty flows from his pen, his poetry song.